Welcome back to another episode of George in the Jungle, presented by Remington Tavern. Remington Tavern can be found at 8892 Glendale Milford Road, 45140, where they have their daily happy hour from 3 to 7 p.m., $5 bourbon whiskey Wednesdays, bottle cap bonanza Thursdays from 7 to 9. You can check them out on Instagram at RemyTavCincy. That's R-E-M-I-T-A-V, Cincy with a Y, or you can follow them on Facebook. But with that said, George.
Yes, sir. How was your week?
Not too bad. The weather's finally, I think it's we're done with sub 60. I think it's fair to say. Today I think it hit 85 here.
I'm really disappointed I didn't get on a golf course today. That was just a fail, a massive fail.
Well,
that's my fault. Nobody
that's
else.
A you problem. Yeah, that's a you problem.
It's a total you problem. I did get a good workout this morning.
That's good.
Almost threw up.
Oh.
One of those.
Well, you went hard.
Went real hard. Doesn't take much for me.
But speaking of going hard, it seems that the men's basketball staff has been going hard this portal season, as you now have two new Bearcats in Bradley's Connor Hickman coming in at the combo guard spot, and Arinton Page transferring in from USC, a guy that this staff was heavily involved in his recruitment out of high school before he followed his AAU teammate Isaiah Collier to USC. But he's I don't even think he had to take an official visit for this one. I think he just knew what he had gone through the first go round, and a year later he's here.
Yeah, and that was good for the Bearcats to have that kind of relationship with him. And, you know, tell you what, if you want me to do you a big favor, I'll get you off the hook about being Mr. Negative on Connor Hickman. And I'll say I'm afraid that Arinton Page might be the next Jermaine Lawrence. Would that get you off the hook?
No, I don't know that helps. I think that puts us in the same boat, George.
No, I got to tell you, and obviously we were familiar with him last year through the whole recruiting process and what he was like. And you go back and look at some of that tape and you get really excited about how well this dude moves, Page, and just, you know, his ball skills and apparently shoots it very well. You know, did not have a great year as a freshman at USC, but he played, what, like 11 minutes a game or something like that. Didn't get a lot of PT. But look, this kid's going to fit right in here, I think. I'm not sure it gets him the low-scoring presence that I was hoping they would get. I hope they don't have to be playing down at the block all the time. I hope they have enough scoring options if that's not something they have to have. I still worry a little bit about that inside scoring, but hopefully he can take some of that load. And then you have the two freshmen coming in that have some size in Betsy and McKinley. So I love this. I mean, I love seeing him come aboard. And I wish he'd done it last year. So I already had a year in this system, but he didn't. I just see this as a great pickup for UC, and it's been a darn good week for UC.
10.7 minutes per game, to your point. So, yeah, you were just about spot on with that 11. He is a 49.2% field goal shooter, 31.3% three-point shooter. He did take some threes. I believe he averaged 0.3 made per game in the 27 games that he played, and I think it was 0.6 or 0.7 attempted. I guess that doesn't math correctly. Maybe it was higher than that. Maybe it was closer to one per game taken. It was
decent for a guy that size.
31.3 from three. Yeah. And his
he can be a bit of a threat there, and he's only going to get better.
His free throw percentage fits right in as a Bearcat, 53.1% from the line. So
God, it does fit in.
But he did average 2 rebounds, about a half an assist, 0.3 blocks, 0.3 steals. So we'll see.
3.1. Yeah, those stats, and you know, I don't know what the circumstances were in those games, and did I watch USC this year? Not really. But you look at that tape, and you look at the stuff he was doing, and how he was able to move, how he was able to handle the ball, how fluid he was. That's what excites me. For a man that big, he moves really, really well. So I was tickled when I heard that pickup, and I just, you know, you've got him and Aziz down low now. You got the two freshmen coming in, and then already with what UCS coming back. And then you add to it Connor Hickman coming in and helping from the perimeter, and certainly was able to shoot the ball at a pretty good clip this past season from three points. Well, heck, all over. I mean, I went back. I'm such a geek sometimes. I went back to look. Well, you know, I went back on ESPN Plus and watched all his plays in that game against Bradley with UC and the NIT. And this kid is a player. I mean, he didn't just stand outside and look to shoot. In fact, one time he went down low. He took the ball inside against Aziz, and he spun him around like a top in there and then laid it in with his left hand. You know, he's got some moves. He can go inside. He can shoot from outside. I just think he's a solid player. And it was funny. I was looking at that game, and I think Newman was in the game, and he hits a three when Skillings went under a screen because Dan was on him. Then he caught a ball out top and beat Dan inside, laid it in. Well, then Newman was on him. And then he made a fairly well-guarded three right after that when Newman was on him. But that says something about that kid when Wes Miller's going to say, you know what, I got to put my best defender on him for a while to cool him off. And that's what Wes did. You know, is he an All-American? No, but I think he's a pretty darn solid player. It gives you a lot of confidence in either one of those guard spots, I think, you know, wherever UC is going to need it.
Yeah, he was 164 of 351 from the field, 74 of 184 from three. So less than half of his shots, I guess. At least the made ones. Less than half.
I would say I was surprised. Okay, what I heard about him coming into that game, and then I was at the game and watching him, and I was surprised at his versatility on offense. I thought it was more of a spot-up shooter, that kind of thing, and that wasn't it. And he's you know, and they mentioned in the game, I mean, the dude bench press is like 315 or something. So that tells me he's been in the weight room working. He's a hard worker. And that's the vibe he gave off in that game that I watched. And, you know, I have no reason to believe that's not him night in and night out. So is he spectacular? Is he going to knock the socks off all the recruiting services? No, but I think he fits very well what Wes and the staff were looking for. So that makes me say two thumbs up for that signing. I know you took some grief last night saying, well, what'd you say? Should I not even repeat this?
No, it's fine. I'm going to double down on it anyway. I'm cautiously optimistic because the signing doesn't really move the needle for me. And I think that's an okay thing that it doesn't move the needle for you. I'm not pissing and moaning about it. I'm not angry about it. I'm not, you know what I mean? Like,
I have to bring it up.
That's fine. I'm not mad about it. I'm also not going to be, you know, jumping to a mountaintop to shout about the staff got Connor Hickman. I do hope that the guy, I meant to make this joke last night, but I'll make it here. I do hope the guy gets an NIL deal with Gillette, because I'm not sure what that is above his lip. But that said, I agree with you. I think he does fit a role here. I think that if things don't go in the NIT the way that they went, and thank goodness they actually played in the NIT, because we got to see Jizzle on fire.
Right.
and we got to see some things that we may not have seen otherwise. And even in, even if you go in back into the Big 12 tournament run for Cincinnati, if things don't go to where you have guys shooting and where you have guys scoring 20 plus points in a game, finally, for the first time, I think all season, I think that you're probably going into portal season with a completely different mindset than you did, as opposed to trying to bring somebody in to build around. Instead, you're able to build around your core because they showed that they finally turned a page and they were able to start doing something. So now you're able to add complementary pieces instead of finding an alpha, because I think you probably have an alpha in whether in any given night it's CMOS Jizzle or Dan Skillings. Right. I think those are your three guys that you can lean into, as opposed to having to go out and find a guy like a Landers Nolly.
Yeah, and just as important for the staff, you know, or for the kids to learn that is the staff to learn that. And that's what that NIT did. And I think the staff had a pretty good idea, but, you know, it's one thing to think it, but you got to go out and do it. And they did it in those games. I wish they could have done it a little more in that Indiana State game, but that was just a hell of a game. Indiana State was on fire. UC put up, what, 81 and still lost? I mean, give me a break. That was a crazy game. I still think UC could have pulled that out at the end. But all that being said, I like the signing. I like the kid. I like what I saw in that game. And, you know, look, it wasn't like UC was the only one after him either. Indiana just had him in for a visit over the weekend and would have loved to have had him and inked him. And not that Indiana's the be-all, the end-all. In fact, they're the third or fourth best team in the state of Indiana right now. When you look at Purdue, Indiana State, maybe Purdue, Fort Wayne, or Ball State, maybe
they just brought in that center, Ballow, today. So I think that improves them tremendously. But
right,
I see what you're saying.
But the kid is he's an entity that more than UC wanted. It wasn't just like, you know,
right,
they just took a guy that fell in their lap. There were other people going after him. And then you go to Page today. I mean, I don't know. There's a lot of programs would like to have a sophomore to be that has his pedigree and has his skills to work with for 2 or 3 years. And so I give Wes and his staff two thumbs up. And what I really like about it is just the trajectory they're on. It's going up and up and up with each year and each step. And a lot of this speaks to that staff and Wes Miller, and that kids do want to be here. And just what, tonight, another one said he wants to be here next year.
Yeah. You had Jizzle James, who actually finally announced, "I'm back," or "let's run it back," or whatever it was that he said on Instagram. But yes, to your point, he's coming back. So the only one at this point that we haven't heard from that's on the roster is CJ Frederick. Here's
hi.
Hey, Dad.
I will just say this on Jizzle. If he's not your favorite player yet, he should be. Well, my understanding, I can't get into specifics, but my understanding is a couple very big brand name programs made a serious run at him with Will Wade strong ass offers, and he chose to stay in Cincinnati.
Okay.
And that definitely speaks to the culture that Wes has built here, in my opinion. I think it's been obvious to me that kids have been more willing to stay here than, I don't know. I mean, it's hard to judge against previous regimes because this portal's gotten so crazy. But if you look around at some of the teams, and some of the teams that had deep runs in the NCAA tournament are having trouble hanging on to their own. They're losing key players.
So I've been on, you know, the phone for 2 days now. It's been insanity. dealing with everything as it happens and is about to happen, and it might happen and it's not happening, and then it's gonna happen and it actually happens in 7 seconds. And by the time I called Keegan, I got the call that Hickman was gonna commit, and by the time I called Keegan, it was already on Twitter or Instagram or whatever.
Yeah, no, it's I was about to tell you, I really miss those days where I was in the middle of that stuff, but it was nothing like it is now with this.
Crazy.
You know, I mean, you know, there was free agency in baseball and in NFL and that stuff. But what you guys are dealing with or in the middle of this and having to report this stuff and try to stay up with it, I don't envy one bit, because it is, I'll tell you what, I was checking stuff today, right? And I go to the grocery store at like, I don't know, 2:30. I come out at 3:30 and someone calls me, oh, yeah, you know, what do you think about Paige? Huh? What? What happened? It's like, it just happens instantaneously.
Yep. So there's still one scholarship open as things currently stand. Who knows what could potentially develop? I mean, last year you had some late entrants, even after we thought the dust had settled into the portal. So who knows what will happen over the course of the next week or whatever. But
here's what I like about it. It's kind of like, and we'll probably get to the Bengals at some point, but it's kind of like they are going into the draft.
BPA.
Quite honestly, they can just sit back and see what pops, what doesn't, who's there, who fits them. If some superstar somehow lands in there, fine. It almost doesn't matter the position at this point. I would like to have a little more inside scoring. I don't know what Wes thinks about that and where they're at. Just personally, I would. But you're at a point where you take the best player available. And if he's there, fine. And if not, okay.
Yeah, I don't know that you necessarily need any position right now as the things currently stand, because I mean, we kind of went over this a little bit, but you got Jizzle Day-Day at the one, you've got Hickman and CJ Frederick at the two. You've got what, Dan and Ravon at the three, you've got CMOS and the Tylers at the four, and then you've got Aziz and Paige at the five, and Josh Reed at the four as well. So I don't know where else you necessarily need anything.
You don't have to reach for anything,
which is a good thing, right? You can
very good thing. That's
find a guy that fits your culture, fits what it is that your program is doing and building on, whether it's a one and done, you know, with a guy with 1 year of eligibility left, whether it's a guy with 2-3 years left, you've got some flexibility. I'm with you. I think I'd probably like to see them go with a big of some sort. Because if either Aziz or Paige go down, now you're kind of relying on a freshman. Whether it be probably at the five, you're probably leaning into McKinley.
Right.
So I'm probably leaning towards the five spot. But as we found out in the tournament, you also can't have enough guys at the point. So,
yeah, and it's crazy. I mean, you know, you've seen how the NBA game has evolved and is so much different, where you don't have to have that so-called big planted down low. And college basketball has definitely gotten there. And so that's why I feel like they do have a lot of flexibility here. But – yeah, given my druthers, give me an inside score yet to go. But I kind of love where they're positioned right now.
I agree. Outside of that, I don't know that there's necessarily too much more on that side of the ball. Women's, obviously there's some things going on around the women's hoops until some things actually start popping off. I don't know that I'm well versed enough to actually have those conversations.
We've seen and heard some things. I've heard some things, But what I heard, I don't think it's come to fruition yet. I was heard as early as tomorrow something could be announced. It would be a big deal for the women's team, but I haven't seen anything saying that's going to happen. So I'm not believing it just yet. But for UC to be in the conversation on a couple of those, one in the portal and you know, the D. Alexander from Purcell Marion, I mean, that's a top five player in the country, and that's a program changer. And, you know, let's put it this way. You know, they got a heck of a program over there, but the way, you know, when she was a freshman and the way she played, and it was almost like a Pied Piper situation where all these other players jumped on board and they're winning state championships. Boy, that would be something. That would be a big deal if she committed to UC. Huge.
Yeah.
And so, you know, my understanding is she's kind of a UC fan. So it'd be really cool if that happened. That would be really cool. There's so many other factors involved, and we know what those are when you're talking NIL and all that. But, you know, give me a kid that loves their hometown, and I'm all in.
It's really cool to see what Katrina and company are building over there. And I think that after this offseason, it seems that it's definitely
trending really well with what they had last year. So, you know, there's reason to believe that she can get this thing going.
Yeah, it seems that whole program over there is certainly trending up. So good to see in that regard. Switching gears to football. Football has had some guys entering the portal. They've had some guys leaving the program, but spring football was on Saturday. Before we get to the portal talk, were you able to make it on Saturday?
I made it.
Okay.
I had some people with me, so I didn't text you guys to go down on the field because I think it would have been rude. So I hung out upstairs. I didn't see you guys. Were you on the field?
I was on the field the whole time. Under this headband, there's some pretty bad sunburn.
Which side? Were you on the press box side?
I ran around. I was moving around.
I should have texted you and had you come over, but I was just
– Yeah.
I would come up. I bought a bag of those Bearcat barbecue chips and
– Yeah.
I had some sodas and – just kind of sat in my seats and watched the proceedings. And, yeah, it was entertaining. I got some, you know, what the heck did I – oh, I'll tell you. So I'll just start with this. Early in the game when they got into the scrimmage portion and all that, you know, and all this stuff was made of the receiving core last year and not getting open – I felt like they weren't getting open early in this thing. Yeah. I felt like too many times the quarterback, didn't matter who it was, didn't matter if it was Sorsby, Lichtenberg, Jones, didn't matter. They would look and then kind of have to scramble to, you know, take off on runs and stuff. But yeah. And you're like, okay, well, maybe the DBs are better this year. Maybe they are. I don't know. You don't know how to take these things when it's your own team against your own team and your own guys. But they did get open a little bit later and some throws were made. And, like I said, it's just tough to really judge where they are, but I can tell you this, I did like what I saw out of Sorsby for the most part. And I thought as it went on, I don't know what happened in that one play though, that little turnover at the goal line, they had four tight ends coming. It was down in the it's not even the open end anymore, but it's like the Bearcat Lair end.
The north end zone?
Yes, the north end zone. What the hell happened on that play? Do you know?
I don't.
Like, it looked like the ball just squirted out. And it was a turnover. I don't know what happened on that. But other than that play, you know, I thought Sorsby did really well. I thought the design runs – he looked the part. He definitely made some nice throws, and he had one he dropped in the bucket over the top that could have been caught. And I forget who that was thrown to, but I feel really good where they're at there. I feel really good where they're there. And then, you know, Lichtenberg, we saw him some last year. I think, you know, he is what he is, and he's okay. He knows what he's doing. Jones looked really good for a freshman playing his first time, a kid who should be graduating this month from high school or next month. But he did have a couple bad throws. One should have been picked. He missed an open receiver, overshot him, and it hit a dude in the chest, and he didn't hang on for the pick. I think his family was sitting a section over from me because they were all fired up about that and bummed at the same time. And then, then the other one he threw was a pick. I guess he was trying to throw it out of bounds, but he threw it in bounds because he was rolling out to his right by the sideline and was just trying to get rid of it.
Coach addressed that one.
Mistakes. They're going to make those mistakes. And
Coach addressed that one in the presser. He said that after the play came over and they had to talk about, if you're going to throw it out, you have to make sure you get it out. If you're going to throw it away, throw it all the way away. You can't just half-ass throw it away. Coach doesn't cuss, so those are my
words. That's totally what that was. But, you know, he appears to be on pad. That dude's put together. He's a big kid. I mean, 6'1" or whatever, but my God, he could play safety or linebacker the way he looks. Then a couple other of those freshmen, Sanks on the defensive side and Cale Woodburn on the wide receiver, true freshman who actually – and he caught a ball in the end zone. Fairly tough catch, good throw by Sorsby, but that was surprising to see, like, true freshman who just came in at the beginning of the semester, and they're out there playing like this. You know, Keegan had given these updates throughout the spring practice notes about Manny Kobe, but my God, did he look good? Am I crazy? That dude maximized a lot of runs.
Yeah, that was, I guess, I think almost every running back scored that wasn't named Corey Kiner. Corey sat out.
He was staying on the sidelines, actually, on the side I was on the entire time, I believe.
Which makes sense. I think the offense stayed on one side.
Totally. You know what that kid does, what he can do. And Satterfield talked about it afterwards about, you know, look, they're running backs. They get the absolute hell beat out of them.
During the season.
They don't need to be taking more beatings. And Kiner, last year, he took a lot of hits because he was, you know, doing a lot of running between the tackles and getting beat up a lot, and there's no sense in exposing him to that. You know what you got. You know you got a stud. You just keep him healthy, and that's a smart thing for the coaching staff to do.
But you got to see plenty run out of Evan Pryor, out of Manny Covey, out of Chance Williams.
Yeah, I was – Chance Williams.
Yep.
There was nothing wrong. I mean, it was funny to see, you know – How little a couple of the guys look, though. You know what I mean? And when I say little, I'm talking about short in stature. You know,
it's reminiscent of the running back from the Eagles and the Chargers back in the day. The where he was just so small compared to everybody else.
Yeah.
Well,
and that kid that played for Kansas State, that's with the Cowboys now, too. And he's tough as nails.
Yeah, that's another one. Deuce Bond.
It's, you know, it's – and you can get away with it at those positions. You really can. And, you know, trust me, I'm not knocking them. I was just kind of – but they were quick. They were fast. They're what you want out of guys like that. And it was good to see Royer out there running around and Joey Belgian out there running around. And, but what's it going to be? I don't know till they tee it up for real. I know this. You look at the guys that left here since that spring game are probably guys that know they're not going to get a lot of whiffs of the field this fall. I feel like since the end of last season, they've done a lot of house cleaning on this roster. Mm-hmm. And some of it was on the field stuff. Some of it was off the field stuff, but it was stuff that needed to be done. And at least we'll see what the result is, but the effort is being made to revamp this roster and make it be what it was a few years ago, where, you know, you had all those NFL draft picks and stuff, and you're looking to upgrade the talent. And obviously, based on last year, that needs to happen. Now, we'll see what the coaches can do if they get said talent. That's yet to be seen, because they certainly didn't prove anything last year with what we saw. So we will see. But they seem to be committed to getting this thing right. I hope like hell they do, but it was a lot of fun to see those guys out there again and just get a look at these guys in a semi-real game situation. And I don't know. I'll go right back to the first thing I said, and I, you know, did Sorsby light the world on fire? Maybe not, but he looked like a pretty damn good quarterback in the making to me.
Did you get a chance to watch the pressers?
I watched Satterfield, Sorsby, Lichtenberg, Dingle. I think those are the four I saw.
Okay. I ask that because I'm curious what your thoughts were on the fact that they were running these pods. And
yeah, I heard.
So you never were actually watching the ones versus the ones, or the ones versus right. the twos, or the twos right. versus the threes, or any of the combination they're about. So you essentially had the a group. One pod would be a group of guys at a position group, like the offensive line or the receivers or whatever the case may be. But in that regard, I think it's, you know, you were talking very early on in this segment about how you weren't sure what guys weren't being open, and you weren't sure if that meant the DBs were better, or if that meant that you weren't sure what that quite meant. But that, who knows what pod you had out there, and you also were missing some guys on the defensive side in Kalen Carroll and Jordan Young. You're missing some guys on the offensive side in Xavier Henderson and Tony Johnson. So I mean, there's all sorts of factors that can go into
at least a couple linemen. Right?
Yeah, Kandra was out. D'Artagnan Tinsley was out. So yeah, you're missing guys here, there, and everywhere. Corey Kiner not playing. All sorts of different situations there. So I just wanted to point that out in through this conversation.
What's interesting about that, and it's like weird, I don't know how the coaches came up with this and all that, but if you look at it this way, so these players don't know if they're a one or a two or a three, or they're not sure. And that means I got to keep playing my butt off. I got to keep competing. Right. And I'm going to have to show up for camp in August or end of July. And I'm going to have to be in tip-top shape if I want to get my butt on that field. And so I never thought about it till after that game, and they were talking about that pod thing, and I'm just running through these, like, why, and you know, he explained some of it, but my God, if you're a kid in that position and you're like, I don't know where I stand, even if I was on the field a lot last year, I'm still kind of, you know, you gotta be on top of your game. And this could be it could be a genius move by the staff, actually, to motivate these guys to, because no one knows where they stand for sure. I mean, I think some of them probably know they're going to be in the two deep, but a lot of them don't. And I think some of them probably were told you're not going to be in the two deep. And that's why we've seen, you know, since the end of the spring game, some names jump into that portal, because they're probably not going to get the playing time they expected when they were recruited by UC. And then there's some, you know, Shepherd and Carter were two of the names that, you know, when UC got them as recruits, that was kind of a neat deal, a big deal, and guys that were well thought of. And God, you just never know. It doesn't always translate. And so I think the staff has an idea, and I think some of the players probably don't know exactly where they stand. But the ones that aren't good enough, I think they were probably told.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see what they get out of the portal. I would love to see some guys at it, especially on defense. It seems that most of the names that I've seen entering the portal have been guys on defense. But even with the guys that they had sitting out, I think that we talked about this a little last night. I know what position groups I think were thin, but what position groups are you wanting to see them add in?
Oh, mercy sakes. Well, anything, honest to God, pretty much anything on defense.
Pretty just much
what I saw last year. I mean, seriously, that's fair. If you've got a player on defense that you think it can that can start, and really offensively, you feel like, I mean, you'll always take depth at offensive line, but I'm still not sure on tight end, but I'm not that worried about it. But I mean, do we know about wide receiver?
So I would say, for me, it's receiver. You always take anything you can get in either side of the trenches.
Right.
Corner.
But yeah, wide receiver is one that's – I mean, running back, I think they're rich.
Yeah, corner continues to be a position group that I think is thin. So I think that's probably where I'm at. I think we're on the same page, essentially.
Yeah, I mean, I was all fired up, though, when they ran those four tight ends out there for that play. It blew up in the test tube.
Goodness.
It sucked. It was probably the worst play in the game. Oh, God. That's how it goes sometimes. You never – that's – the guy with me, we're like four tight ends, and we're laughing. We're like, this ought to be good. That happened. We're like, I bet they don't run that again. I still don't know what the hell happened.
Switching gears completely, the Cincinnati Reds, since the last time we talked, they played they've played five games since our last conversation. Most recently, they didn't fare so well. They're just starting. They're over on the West Coast playing Seattle. Last night, they did not fare so well against Seattle, losing 9-3, but that was coming right after a three-game sweep of the Chicago White Sox, where they scored 27 runs compared to the White Sox 5. And then, of course,
the White Sox are a disgrace, by the way.
They are really, really
bad. And I'm saying that as someone who absolutely loves Andrew Benintendi and the whole Benintendi family, and his grandpa coached me in baseball and is one of my favorites. If not of all time, from Georgetown, Ohio. Oh, yeah. I mean, I would love for the White Sox to be good because of Andrew, and I feel bad for him because he's struggling and he's hearing it from the fans. But that team is a mess right now. So the Reds went in there and did what they should have done.
And, of course, they did have the series finale against the Brewers on Wednesday. Wasn't supposed to be the series finale. Ended up being the series finale because of a postponed game.
Yeah,
that'll be made up in August, late August at that. But we got to see a little bit of CES getting out of his slump. We got to see Candelario getting out of his slump. We got to see Ellie De La Cruz on fire.
Yeah.
On fire. And then we got to see Nick Lodolo coming back from his injury. We got to see pretty much everything that you would want to see in that Chicago series.
Yeah, and everything you just mentioned excites me for the season. Lodolo for sure. My God, yeah. If he can stay healthy, and you know, he's shown signs of this. When he's healthy, he's really damn good. He's really good. Mm-hmm. And he was really, really good his first time out the other day. He won't do that every game. They all have stinkers. But that guy, he could be really, really good. And if he is, they're going to be right where I thought they'd be. for the entire season. It was nice that David Bell took your suggestion and made some lineup changes in the batting order. And you know what? I don't know. I mean, I don't think a veteran like him, does he feel pressure where he's hitting in the lineup? You wouldn't think so, but all I know is when he dropped down to 7, all of a sudden he starts mashing. So
we're talking about Candelario there. Yeah. For those who weren't picking up what you were putting down.
Oh, I thought I said his name, but I don't know. But yeah, Candelario, yeah. Well, you made the suggestion, you know, Steer now in the 4 spot, which makes sense. And he's still driving in runs, by the way.
He's leading the league, at least at one point this weekend, he was leading the league. I don't know if he still does or not, but.
Yeah, I don't know, but he's definitely leading the team. I know that.
Sure.
But, you know, and CES has come alive and really looks like, you know, I mean, he looks like a 3-hole hitter right now. You move Benson up and he seems to take to that. And he's, you know, he can cause some issues on the base paths too. You know, it's just like they're missing some pieces, but what they have behind them are showing some signs that they might be able to hold the fort here till everybody gets back. But Frankie Montas is he's got to get his stuff straightened out, man. He can't do what he did last night and the start before. And, you know, last night he has that horrible first game, 45 freaking pitches in the first
game. That's a lot of pitches.
You're almost done at that point in today's game.
Yeah, that's halfway.
It was so funny. The first inning's still going on, and Brantley's talking about that like, it doesn't matter what he does now. He ain't pitching deep in this game. I'll be glad if he gets 3 innings, let alone 5, which, you know, I think it was the 3rd when he got knocked out. He came back and, you know, he walked too many guys, obviously, threw 45 pitches, comes back, has a nice second inning, then walks a guy to start the 3rd, gives up a homer. And it's like, you know, that's it. You're done, which he was.
But you did get to see Nick.
Ever since I put that bet on him, he's gone to hell in a handbasket.
It's your fault. But we did get to see Nick Martinez, on the other hand, pitch really well out of the pen, which
that's
what
the role I want for him.
I agree.
Not necessarily pop up, you know, when it's out of reach. But if a guy's struggling early and you still have a chance,
you've got a guy
and do what he did. And that's, I don't know, that would be a nice luxury for the Reds to have if he can fill that role. And that's going to be up to guys like Frankie Montas, because I don't care how much you've paid Frankie, and they paid a lot, $15 million a year or whatever it is. But, and look, it's been 2 games. We'll see where he is. He may carry the load from here on out. We'll see. But at some point, if that keeps happening, you can't wait too long to say, you know what, dude, we can't keep running you out there. And there's a guy on the mound tonight that I feel the same way about. He's showing signs, Hunter Green, of coming around, but you can't constantly, you know, be throwing these balls over the middle of the plate and getting them hit for 430 feet. You can't do it. Well, that's what happened his last time out.
It's not good for the back of your baseball card, no.
No, he had 2 pitches right over the middle of the plate just get hammered.
I think that you're probably a couple games away from me saying that maybe it's time to move India out of that leadoff role. But he did have
– get it.
He did have that crazy game where he had, what, 4 walks in a game, 3 walks in a game?
You know, I'm a little partial to him, but I don't necessarily think he should be hitting leadoff either. I just think he's a tough player and he's filling a role now that I'm glad he's here to fill. Even though defensively, I get it. But
in no way, shape, or form, I'm not saying he doesn't need to be on this team. I'm not saying he doesn't need to start. I'm not saying he doesn't need to be in the field. I'm totally okay with all of those things. All I'm saying is I don't know that he's necessarily this team's answer at the leadoff spot. So I do want to see some more hits out of him there. But as long as you're getting on base, I guess, and again, I know he had all of those walks in a game. I think they said that was his first time since his rookie year having that many walks in a game. You gotta get on base.
No,
name of the game.
And also, I would say, I mean, cross your fingers. Everything's been positive on Friedel coming back. That'll be his role. So we're looking at two more weeks, maybe three. But I think 2 to 3 weeks, that dude's back. Is everything – I mean, apparently he's a pretty quick healer.
Well, and 2 to 3 weeks is plenty of time for a guy like India to also turn things around, and to the point where we're not even having that conversation, but instead potentially having a conversation where maybe you have guys vying for that role, which is where we want to be.
Yeah, but I'll tell you, I'm a big fan of TJ in that leadoff role.
I am as well. You will, and outside of that, the two, as long as CES is still hitting, then you won't hear me saying a word about him in the three spot, because I think his power is probably second to none on this team. But if it doesn't continue, I'd much rather have Steer move up into that three spot and just kind of hang out there for as long as he likes.
Yeah, that dude, you can put him anywhere, to be honest. But, yeah, he's a good three hitter. He's been he was a good seven hitter. He's just a player, and it does seem like, isn't it weird that a guy like that, though, seems like he has to constantly prove himself over and over? I don't quite get it. I'm not sure why he was hitting so far down in that lineup to begin with.
I'm not sure there's a player on this team that I'm currently more bullish on than Spencer Steer.
I get it. I mean, from the time he's come up with him, he's shown it. And it doesn't matter where they put him in the field. It just doesn't matter. He just plays. He's good. What else we got on the Reds? Anything else? Hopefully.
They're finishing up this series against Seattle before they come home and have a homestand against the Angels this weekend. The Angels are not great currently either. So that's not a bad team to get right if things go a little wonky with this Seattle series. As I don't love the pitcher they're going up against tonight, and I don't know who they have tomorrow.
No, that kid's good.
If you struggle tonight, then
right-handed, but he's good.
If you struggle tonight, then there goes the series. But
right.
But you do have the Angels and the Phillies, and those are two teams right now that are also struggling. So this you got to get the wins right now where you can outside the division, because the division right now is four teams over 500.
How is that possible?
And the fifth team is one game under 500. So this division is pure pandemonium and is probably just another thing that's going to get me very upset about the fact that they didn't do more this offseason to just run away with this division.
Well, I will also say it's still very early. This is not
sure
a huge sample for a baseball season, but it is. And the Pirates are starting to come back to earth, it looks like. I will say this, and we should acknowledge, you know, how Abbott's been pitching and what he did Friday night. I know the Reds scored a boatload of runs, but that dude's a bulldog.
You made the Tom Browning reference to him the last time we spoke, I believe. And now every time I see him with his little – he just has that little belly of his that hangs over the belt. And I can't unsee Tom Browning now, largely because of the little belly hanging over
that. There's just little other mannerisms that remind me of that. I'll get myself in trouble here, but you know, I know Abbott comes from a damn good family and all that, but I just wonder if Tom Browning spent a night in Virginia at some point.
In any case, we'll see what these Reds do.
Yeah, from that, it really is funny to see him out there, and just he's got that same bulldog mentality, and you know, works fast, not as fast as Suter, but my God. I mean, I'm gonna have to go back and look, or I'm gonna have to ask him, or I'll ask his father-in-law if he always worked that fast. I should probably know this, if it was always that way before the pitch clock, because this dude gets the ball. Well, I don't know that he ever shakes off a catcher either. I think he just throws it.
Yeah, I'm not even sure he takes signals from the catcher at this point.
It's amazing how quick he is.
It's reminiscent it's a little hilarious. Bit of it's a little reminiscent of Wade Miley. We saw Miley do this
before
the pitch clock.
And my God, yes.
I think Suter might actually be faster than Wade Miley.
And that's saying something. And trust me, those dudes loved playing behind Wade Miley. They loved it. When it was his turn to pitch, the whole team was fired up because they knew they were going to be standing out there in the outfield and, you know, hearing someone yell their name. And, you know, it was just like, I got to be ready, got to be ready, got to be ready. And, boy, they loved playing behind him. And Suter, as you said, is quicker than that.
Two more topics I want to get to before we get out of here for this week. The Bengals have a draft coming up here. I can't believe it this quickly. It's already upon us.
I know.
The NFL draft is just about here. And the Bengals are currently sitting at 18. I don't expect them to move off of 18, barring it would be the most un-Bengal-like thing if they either traded. Even if they traded back, I think that would be a little un-Bengal-like for them to try and stockpile later picks. But for them to trade up from 18 would be wildly out of character. So here they sit at 18. T. Higgins, by all counts, came out this week and said he'll be back as a Bengal and will be playing for a Super Bowl with the Cincinnati Bengals. Doing the PR thing. What do you expect
to do that anyway?
I think everybody did, but I think then you had
dude, he's going to make what 20 and a half or 21 and a half. And I get wanting the big, you know, guaranteed deal. Of course you want that, but this collective bargaining agreement has been pretty good for the players for the most part. A lot of guys have made out. They took – so back – way back when, there would be guys, let's say like Akili Smith drafted by the Bengals. And they had that salary structure, and that guy would get a lot of guaranteed money, and you had veterans who had produced and were damn good, but the system was set up where they didn't necessarily get that money. And it's set up now where these veterans that prove their worth – will make that money for the year they are playing. And he's going to make the money he is worth for the year he's going to play. And I just think he's a good guy anyway. I think he's a gamer. I think he's a dude that wants to go out there and win and love success. And so I didn't see this as being a monumental problem that he was going to turn into this head case. Now, I could be proven wrong. I have been. I've missed on some of these. But I don't see that happening. I think he sees an opportunity to go out and have a hell of a year with a hopefully healthy Joe Burrow. And Zach talked about that, and everything's on schedule. You know, you got Jamar on the other side. I mean, he's got a chance to have a hell of a year going into where he's a free agent if he's not tagged again and maybe get a ring. So I was not shocked by that, and I'm glad he sees it that way. I think that's the right way to see it, and I think he's going to make the most of what he has, and that's the mark of a good teammate, a good player, and, you know, a good human being, and I'm glad to hear that. I think – and now they're set up. They have all that. They're set up going into this draft where they can take whatever they want. And
so, you
know, unless someone bowls them over, and maybe they will move back. If somebody, I don't think anyone's going to bowl them over for 18, but
who knows?
whatever the hell they want here. And I love it. They don't have to reach for someone. They don't have to, they can go offensive lineman. They can go defensive lineman. They can go corner. They can go whatever the hell they want.
So at 18, George Bogle, you're on the clock. Who are you hoping above any other name is there at 18, realistically?
Oh, my God. Any of the top offensive linemen, and I know they have their tackles maybe, but give me the kid from Alabama, Latham. Give me, you know what, though? I would even take the defensive lineman from Texas, too.
That's who I want, Byron Murphy.
Yeah, I would take him.
That's who I want.
That's the beauty of this position. And the reason I give a slight edge for Latham or one of the other tackles, a kid from, is it Oregon State? And these guys can always move inside and give competition to where you would like to see some competition there at the guard position. But I err on the side of the offensive line because you've got Joe Burrow back there, and you've got to keep him upright, and you've got to keep him healthy, because God bless Jake Browning and all they did last year. But I mean, that's a guy that makes it happen. And I'm just I saw too many nightmares on these Bengals teams not having enough offensive linemen where it got them in deep, deep trouble. And when you can't keep a quarterback from getting sacked and you can't run the football, you can't do squat. You get killed. So I would shade my wishes towards the offensive line, but I'd be happy. Either line is my priority.
Not super high on another tackle from Alabama. I have seen two tackles on this team over the course of the last decade or so in Andre Smith and most recently Jonah Williams. And I'm all the way out on Nick Saban, Alabama tackles.
I understand that. I do understand that. So the guy from Oregon State, which I don't know, can he play?
Latu?
Yeah.
Is that his name, Latu?
No. Oh, my God. You're going to ask me to say this. Talese Fuaga?
Okay. Fuaga? I didn't know if it was Fuaga, Latu, or...
I don't know. I knew Fautanu. I knew last week. I was better prepared for the draft last week. Don't ask me why, because I'm freaking 1 week out from the draft now.
Pretty sure all of those guys are in the bloodline.
What's that?
That's a WWE reference for those of you who aren't following along. I was there with you, Chad. Well done. But yeah, I want Byron Murphy there. The Bengals have not drafted a defensive tackle in a long time. And I think that's where I'd like them to go and have a guy there at that position for probably a good long while.
Yeah, you can't go wrong there as long as that guy's, a fit and gets on the field and does. But look, to me, football is a line-driven game, really. I mean, those guys don't get any – some of them get notoriety, but that's where it starts.
It would be interesting, though, to see the Bengals do something wild and crazy, like selecting a Brian Thomas at that spot and then consequentially trade T. Higgins thereafter. But again, that would be very un-Bengal-like.
It would be un-Bengal-like, but I get where you're coming from there. But I would rather... I mean, hell, if it gets to that, you know what I'd do?
What would you do, George?
Draft Brock Bowers.
Well, if he's there. If he's there.
I'll tell you what, that would be a jolt. It would be fine. I don't know. I mean, I don't know. Is that kid going to be a surefire stud in the NFL? He sure looks like it.
I'm seeing nothing to say that the Bengals would know how to use a tight end any better than Arthur Smith used Kyle Pitts down in Atlanta. So,
well, that's true.
We'll see.
Had a chance at Michael Mayer last year too.
Yep, and so he didn't do anything out in Oakland either. But
I'll tell you what, he probably did more than what the Bengals' first round pick did. But
probably did more than what the Bengals have done with a tight end in quite some time as well. So who knows? Switching subjects here. FC Cincinnati loses another one.
Can't score.
They can't score. What is this team? I'm seeing things on Twitter. I don't follow this team closely enough to be able to speak to this. Maybe you can, George, but I'm seeing that every position, I saw somebody tweet this out. Every position that they made a move this offseason, they actually got worse. Do you believe that to be the case?
It feels like that's the case. Yeah, I know what they're saying. And that's disappointing because this front office has done a pretty damn good job the past couple of years. Mm-hmm. And there's been some whiffs, and yeah, I get what they're saying. And the proof is in the results. And you're seeing what they've scored 8 goals in 8 games in MLS play. I believe
that's right. That's not enough to win games.
No, that you're going to get. It'll be like last year where, okay, you know, they had a great year. They won a lot of matches, but when they got in the playoffs and push came to shove, teams just had more firepower. And they were a better offensive club last year. So, it's a problem. I still have faith. The Pat Noonan and company, they'll figure it out. Chris Albright, the GM. But I don't know. It's a head scratcher that, yes, they did get worse. And they knew what they were up against, and they knew what they were losing. But we'll see. It's still relatively early. You know, you're eight games in, 9 coming up this week down in Atlanta. I don't know. It's disappointing. It's very disappointing to see the start they're off to, even though they're not buried in the standings or anything like that. But it doesn't feel good.
Yeah. You got to win games. You can't just draw and lose. It's not a good way to sneak into the playoffs if you have any chance of surviving. Other team
scores a goal, you're in trouble.
Yeah,
that's whether it's good. In the first minute, you know,
not a good place to be.
Right.
Any local high school news from George Vogel?
No, nothing. All I've been doing is kind of keeping an eye on, you know, the young basketball player, Purcell Marion, and kind of anticipating what's going on there because that would be a big, big, big deal if she decides to stay home and play basketball.
Yeah, if she decides to pull the trigger and commit to Cincinnati, she would be the highest. Really
interesting to see. I mean, I would love to see that. I would love to see some buzz. You know, I mean, that would probably – I mean, Cheryl Cook was the all-time great. She committed when I was still at UC from Indianapolis, and it was amazing. And back then, I mean, you know, women's basketball, not in its infancy, but it wasn't where it was today. But that was a big deal. It was kind of a shocker.
She'd be the highest-ranked player to ever commit to Cincinnati.
Yeah, and
in any sport
they've ever had. And they've had some good ones.
In any sport, she'd be the highest ranked player.
Yeah, it was amazing. It's like, huh? And then you see her play, and it's like she was so far ahead of her time. I mean, really, it was, you know, 20-some years after the Big O came here from Indianapolis, and it's like, it's interesting that, you know, the two top-ranked players and – God, I'll get myself in trouble here with Kenyon Martin, but, you know, the Big O was the Big O. And then, you know, 20-some years later, you got Cheryl Cook and both from the Indianapolis area committing to UC is kind of interesting. That's where two best players came from.
I want to go back and clarify my comment about the highest ranked player. I was talking about Dee Alexander. If she commits, she would be the highest ranked player.
Yeah, higher than Cher, yes.
Highest ranked player in any sport that would have committed to Cincinnati. So we'll see. It could be an interesting week.
Yeah, because honestly, Kenyon was under the radar. Like, yeah, you know, he was definitely – I remember when they were recruiting him and one of the assistants told me, they're like, we got this kid in Texas that I'm telling you is going to be so good. And it's like there wasn't a whole lot of buzz and they got him. And, you know, then they got him in here and well, you won't remember this, but I can't remember what the deal was, but he wasn't eligible for the first semester or the first part of the season. And then they were able to somehow, there was some way they did this where he either didn't take classes and retook the SAT. There was something they did. And then at the break, he was eligible and was not a superstar by any stretch. Very, very, very raw. And you give Kenyon Martin so much credit for how much better he got. And the staff and Bob Huggins pushing him along. And by the time that kid was a junior, he was a monster. And I did not see that coming because he improved his shot. He became a good free throw shooter. He got fouled all the time because he was constantly doing stuff under the bucket. It was just, wow, watching that happen. And then I go back to that assistant telling me, we think this kid's going to be great. It's like, who? What? You know, he came in and he couldn't make a free throw. He didn't look like he'd ever shot a ball before. By the time he was a junior, he was a damn stud. Oh, and then, well, God, that brings back bad memories now. I think that's such a shame.
That's going to be the note that we end this podcast on. So,
they hung a banner, damn it.
Way to go. Way to bring everybody's mood.
Hung a banner.
Way to bring everybody's mood down, George.
No, look, they just got a great recruit today in the portal. They got a good one yesterday. They're on the upswing, baby. They're on the upswing.
That's what we call bookending it in the bids. That's going to wrap it up for George in the Jungle. Again, check out Remington Tavern. They sponsor us. We appreciate them at 8892 Glendale Milford Road, 45140, where you can check out their daily happy hour from 3 to 7 p.m. Their $5 bourbon whiskey Wednesdays, bottle cap bonanza on Thursdays from 7 to 9 p.m. Check them out on Instagram at RemyTavCincy or follow them on Facebook. But for George Vogel, I'm Aaron Smith. And we will catch you on this same channel, 9 o'clock next Tuesday.